After we get the tapes up.
Yes.
Here.
Supervisor Vicki.
Here.
Supervisor Rose. Supervisor Holman.
Present.
Supervisor Esposito.
Here.
Supervisor Brig. Supervisor Elverman.
Yes.
And you saying government for Briglio?
Briglio, yes, present.
Thank you. Supervisor Bruning has called and she will be excused. I expect Terry shortly. Citizens' comments. At this time, we'll open the floor up to citizens' comments. Anybody wishing to speak? Anybody wishing to speak? Anybody wishing to speak? Seeing none, citizens' comments are closed. Our comments, Chair, Supervisor, Youth and Governance. This time, I don't have any comments. Communications, I have no communications. Approval of December 11th, 2012 minutes.
I move the approval, Mr. Chairman.
I'll second that.
Moved by Supervisor Elverman, second by Supervisor Kubicki to approve the minutes of December 11th, 2012. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? They are approved. Report on Corp Council's 2013 budget. Bernie?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Included in the agenda packet is our...
But the record shows Supervisor Rose has arrived.
Our printout for the status of our budget for this year. Unfortunately, the finance department is not able to give projections so early on salaries. And the great majority of our budget is salaries, so we don't have really much... interesting things on this report. So, but it's just so you know, everything is normal. Don't expect anything.
Nothing interesting on the report. Really nothing.
That's a zero.
But they usually catch up in early March.
Okay. Any questions pertaining to the budget or any items from the committee? Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. We'll have an update from Todd Battle on economic development. Actually, we were looking, I asked him to come to give us a closure of last year, some of the things in the pipeline now, and you know, some other questions we can have for him. So, Todd?
Sure. I think I'll start by just passing out a couple of things, and then I'll try to provide a summary overview of the kind of the key items. This should be enough for everybody. So Chairman Gentz and Supervisors, I'm Todd Dowell with the Kenosha Area Business Alliance, the economic development organization here in Kenosha County, and just here in front of you tonight to talk a little bit about recent economic development. I think I'd start by just kind of working off this report that is in front of you. This is something we started preparing a few years ago, really, as we were starting to make presentations along with the county to bond rating agencies. It was really done as an effort to kind of summarize all the different development activities taking place in the community and kind of give somebody that maybe isn't as familiar with the community and its economic makeup kind of what's happening in the community. So report starts and just talks about some of the kind of anchor companies that are kind of synonymous with Kenosha in terms of the Jockeys and Ocean Sprays and Snap-ons, and a little bit about the strength of those companies, any recent expansions, and how they're doing from a financial performance and employment standpoint. Talks a little bit about one of the newer additions to the community in terms of Uline and the completion of their headquarters and campus move and how they're doing in terms of employment and growth. Goes further into just a number of, this covers probably the last 12 to 18 months plus or minus of either expansions, new investments, new companies moving into the community, or acquisitions that, you know, have a material impact on certain businesses. So I'll just hit a few of these highlights. 4J International is referenced here. The reason that's significant, they're repurposing the former LeBlanc building. So they've acquired what was about a 90,000 vacant industrial building on 30th Avenue, and they're repurposing it into use for their industrial company. So kind of nice to get that vacant building absorbed. A couple notes here on Allied Plastics and Bradshaw Medical. Those are two fast-growing, mid-sized companies that employ in excess of 100, and in one case 150, in another case in excess of 125 people, and continue to demonstrate good growth in land new contracts. Catalyst Exhibits moved into the community a little over, maybe a little bit more than a year ago. They've taken up residency in Lakeview Corporate Park in Pleasant Prairie. They employed north of 100 people and have kind of got their entire operation up and running in Pleasant Prairie. Centresis is another business that's operated out of the business park of Kenosha for the better part of 15 or 20 years. They're expanding again. They bought a building across the street. They recently acquired a 20,000 square foot building, and they're entering a partnership with a German company. They're setting up a joint venture, which will kind of combine their centrifuge technology with this German company's waste capture technology. And it's kind of a closed loop system for wastewater treatment. So they're pretty excited about that venture. Two new businesses moved into the community in recent times in the last 6 months or so. Good Foods Group is a food manufacturing company that was previously based in Chicago. They acquired about a 56,000 square foot facility in Lakeview Corporate Park, and they're in the process of setting that up as a production facility. Another company called Handy Ramp has other manufacturing operations in Libertyville, and they recently bought about a 30,000 square foot building in the business park of Kenosha, and they're in the process of establishing a new manufacturing operation there. There's a reference here to a company called Integrated Merchandising Systems. The reason that's significant, probably the biggest industrial vacancy we've had in the community for the better part of 5 years, is the very large 600,000 square foot plus building across from the Kenosha Airport. Integrated Merchandising Systems recently executed a lease to take half the space in that building. So what was a building with 620,000 square feet of vacant space now has a new tenant that's taken about 312,000 square feet, so it's about half occupied. Another kind of bigger news item would be Meyer Corporation. They announced just before the end of 2012 their plans to acquire Super Value's Midwest distribution operations in Lakeview Corporate Park and Pleasant Prairie. That sale has since closed, so Meyer is essentially stepping into Pleasant Prairie. They will take ownership of Super Value's grocery distribution real estate assets that are kind of at the northeast corner of Lakeview Corporate Park. They are in the planning and approval process of getting an addition put onto the building. Their plan would be about middle part of this year to basically shut down the current operation, add about a quarter million square feet to the facility, and then ramp up their own operations and really probably be fully operational middle part of 2014. They anticipate that that operation, once fully up and running, will employ just shy of 500 people. I think they anticipate employment in the 485 or 486 range. They also, it's mentioned later, but I just noted now, they're also in the process of building a half a dozen stores throughout southeastern Wisconsin. And many of you probably know, I think a week or so ago, they petitioned the city for a rezoning of a commercial site near the southeast corner of Highway 50 and Green Bay Road. And they have plans to build about a 200,000 square foot retail store there.
Is it all on track to proceed? Did they get what they needed?
It's a couple part process. The what was considered last week was a rezoning of the property, so that has been approved. And the next step, if I understand it correctly, would be the application and issuance of a conditional use permit. So the zoning has been approved and was approved by a unanimous vote. I think the next step would be for them to obtain a conditional use permit.
Thank you.
So far, yes. And then there's a few other notes in here about area companies expanding or completing projects, offsite Pacific Stands, Rare Pacific Logistics. Rust-Oleum has just done a pretty nice expansion of their facility. They added an aerosol paint line, and they added a fourth shift. And so they recently added about 50 new positions to their Pleasant Prairie manufacturing plant. X10 Industries, which is a company that's been based in the business park of Kenosha since the late 90s, just bought a business down in Lockport, Illinois, and they've really grown tremendously in the last probably 2 years or so. So those are some of the highlights on the industrial side. The other thing we do in this, you know, kind of basing this on the report we would provide to a Moody's and Standard & Poor's, but I think it's relevant here, is we just try to highlight some of the other things going on in the community. So we typically would include an update on education or healthcare or major institutional projects. Probably the most notable change here would be Aurora has announced plans to build about a $19 million cancer treatment facility out near Highway 50 and I-94. I think that the construction of that facility is slated to get started this summer. United Hospital System has completed the build-out of their medical office building on their St. Catherine's campus, St. Catherine's Commons campus. We reference in here some of the work being done at Carthage. They completed their student dormitories. They recently announced plans for a new science building, and are in the midst of fundraising for that. Gateway Technical College today opened their IMET Center, which is a kind of an advanced manufacturing training center. It's an expansion to a building that they had in Sturtevant, in the industrial park in Sturtevant. They've greatly enhanced the capacity there. I think they added about 18,000 square feet to the facility, and most of it is for training for trades and industrial occupations.
Is that based on, like, you and I have had conversations for over a year to work on getting, you know, more technical training for the jobs and the industries that come in. Is that what that's for?
Yeah, a good way to say this is Gateway. Like, so Gateway would have traditional curriculum where you could get a one-year degree, a two-year degree, a certificate, or what have you. And so the demand for that type of, you know, degree program, you know, absorbs a lot of their capacity. So if an industrial company said, you know, we have openings for 20 people in CNC machining, it might be difficult to run a kind of an industrial training program specifically for that company or specifically for people that need those jobs if they weren't enrolled in the Gateway program already. I think one of the beauty of the IMET Center is it's meant to be kind of this on-demand boot camps, quick training, quick turn. Good. We've got this immediate need for welders or this immediate need for CNC machine operators. How do we get them the training they need quickly? And so that's part of it. Just a few other notes here. We highlight some of the infrastructure projects, whether they're roads or broadband, and there's been some notes in here we've kept in the past. We talked a little bit about a couple of downtown projects and some other commercial projects. Maybe some notable commercial projects would be, you know, kind of a positive sign that the former Target store is now being slated for redevelopment. There are two tenants that are splitting up. There's a new developer that bought the property, and they're splitting it up, and they have two tenants coming in there, so that's positive. Just other things to take note of. Majestic Realty recently bought a 90-acre industrial site in Lakeview Corporate Park. Majestic is either the first or second largest privately held industrial development company in the country. They have put a pretty good vote of confidence into the community by buying a 90-acre site for industrial development. That was really kind of the last very large piece of land in and around Lakeview Corporate Park that Wispark owned. So they purchased the site from Wispark and have plans for some development to take place there. I think everybody probably sees a little bit going on at the Kenosha Chrysler Engine, Chrysler Engine plant site and the cleanup there. Demolition's proceeding. That's coming along pretty nicely. And then at the bottom of, I guess, maybe the last page of this formal report, we just talk a little bit about some trends. And so our unemployment rates come down about 5 percentage points. It peaked at nearly 13% in February of 2010. Since, it's come down to below 8%, so dropped nearly 5 percentage points. A few years ago, if we were given a report like this, there may have been 6, 8, or 10 plant layoffs or mass layoffs or plant closings that would have been disclosed to somebody like a Moody's. That subsided pretty significantly. We're seeing good signs in terms of business investment and expansions and hiring. Slowly but surely, things have gotten a little bit better in the industrial sector. On the industrial development side, our vacancy rates for industrial property, particularly if you exclude some of these properties that are, you know, like maybe not really, you know, inhabitable. Like a good example would be like the Chrysler site used to count against us in terms of industrial vacancy, and it really was 2 million square feet of building that really wasn't intended to be occupied. But you start excluding some of those, and like our real effective industrial vacancy rates hovering in the 5 and 6% range, so it's getting fairly low. Quietly over the last few years, there have been some good industrial absorption, and we're seeing a lot of activity. Just from in terms of prospects and potential companies that are talking to us about either financing for expansions and loans, or companies that are currently not in the community talking about sites in the community. And, you know, really in the last 2 years, we've taken about 2,000, you know, about 2,000 people have come off the unemployment rolls. In January of 2011, I think the county as a whole had about 8,700 people that would have been considered unemployed. And as of December of this past year, that number dropped to about 6,600. So, you know, I think things are generally getting better. We're seeing some pretty good pickup in industrial activity particularly, and that's, you know, where we spend the majority of our time. And that's maybe a, you know, kind of a quick overview of some of the things we see happen, and I'd probably stop there and open it up for questions and a discussion about things you might want to dive deeper into.
Vice Chair Kubicki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to thank Todd Battle for the comprehensive report given here. I like the trend of that unemployment rate going downward. That's one nice thing I like to see. 4J International, you said it's international business and trade. Is there anything specific that they deal with or that you could tell me? Or?
Yeah, I really don't know a ton about the company. Just what I've read in a couple of different reports. We've talked to their principals on a couple different occasions. My impression is they're kind of doing some international distribution, different kind of importing and exporting of products in and out of the country. I don't know that much about them.
Okay, and then let's see here, where am I? Oh, Tilted Kilt, that's going to be occupying the old Country Buffet building. Is that correct?
That's my understanding also.
Okay. Yes. Any thought on the the old Jewel area, which is north of Target? I know you mentioned Target with two possible occupants in there, but have we any talk on that Jewel property that's further north, or that grocer property, whichever it was? I forgot what it was, last century or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah, it was a century. Continental Properties, which is a company out of the greater Milwaukee area, acquired the Target store and then brought to bear the Bed Bath & Beyond and the Gordman's store.
Okay.
I think the Century location you're talking about, I think, is separate ownership. I don't know if there's new plans for
they're
that
not tied in, in other words.
I think it's done separately, yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Supervisor Rose.
Todd, what's the most recent unemployment for city and county? These figures, I know, are September.
What I had for the December 2012 unemployment rate for countywide, I don't have a specific city, was 7.8. And I'm not sure, you know, typically they'll annually adjust those figures. I think that was just for the month of December, the unemployment rate was 7.8.
For the county, but I mean,
countywide,
what about
this? I don't know.
What about the city?
I don't know what it is specific to the city.
No.
What's wrong?
Todd, we've got on our agenda tonight the our IGA with the Menominee Nation. The governor has come out recently, and I'm considering you our expert on job creation, and that's what you folks do, has come out recently and said that part of his criteria is going to be an agreement of all the Indian nations and the state of Wisconsin. If the federal government approves this and it gets to the governor's desk. I know that you've been involved somewhat in this. All of us have. What can CABA do? What can the county do when that type of lance has been cast, that's what it's going to take? Because we all know that's a way out. That's the Potawatomis have spent, according to a couple lobbyists I know, $6.9 million in recent years to fight this. Is there anything the county and CABA can do across party lines? Because I know that's where we're going to end up.
Yeah, I'd be honest in telling you, it hasn't been it hasn't been something that has been a huge focus of ours, and I think the thinking has been the approval process and how that application gets received and approved, and how the intergovernmental agreements is a is a completely political process. It needs to be approved by various government agencies. It needs to be approved by various political bodies. And I guess, you know, we kind of have felt like our limited resources that we have as an economic development group are probably better spent on, you know, industrial development, making loans, recruiting manufacturing companies in the community, working with existing companies to expand, that type of thing, and letting others that are probably more savvy and more influential in the political process, you know, do their job on that. So we haven't, you know, invested a ton of our personal time or energy into it for that reason. We're just not, we think we're probably better at doing industrial development and making loans and working on industrial parks and that type of thing, and less good at figuring out how to, you know, navigate a casino approval process through the various bodies it has to go through.
Right. Okay. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah.
I have a couple of things. Was any of the high impact fund money used for anything that you gave us a briefing on?
Yeah. To date, we've closed one deal, and that would be with the Bradshaw Medical expansion.
Okay.
And so we've reported on that in the past, but it's just a refresher. Bradshaw Medical probably founded and started their company in 2006 and leased space in the business park in Kenosha with probably less than 5 employees. And grew pretty significantly. And the most recent, the deal that we did with them on a high impact project was for their most recent expansion. They have projected they'll add in excess of 50 employees, maybe upwards to 80 employees with this most recent expansion, and they did a pretty significant investment in their R&D operation. That's the only kind of closed project. We've got two other pending commitments that we've made that aren't reflected in this report, but are on projects that aren't necessarily final yet, or approved, or closed.
Do they look good as far as getting done?
Yeah, I think so. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. The second thing I want to ask you about is the downtown issue. We've all read the paper and, you know, had it come out with, you know, the city looking to get some stuff to downtown and working with you guys to get a person in charge of handling that. Why don't you give us a little update on where we are with that situation?
Yeah, great question. So CABA, you know, really, as I was answering Supervisor Elverman's question, you know, is a countywide group that's really traditionally cut our teeth on industrial development. You know, we really kind of spent our time working in the industrial park, trying to diversify the industrial base, making loans to expanding manufacturing companies. A few years ago, as we did some kind of community assessment and strategic planning, consistently we started to hear back, even from our industrial companies and other large employers, that the health and the vibrancy and the image of the downtown wasn't necessarily extremely positive, you know, in terms of their efforts to recruit people, in terms of efforts to bring business or talented workers into the community. The downtown was just viewed as something that needed a more robust development effort. So we spent a little time working with our board and others in the community. We ended up coming to the conclusion that we should form some sort of blue ribbon task force or steering committee and really get a game plan for downtown development. We started that process last year, and in the probably about October of last year, we finally got blessed what we consider kind of the new downtown strategic development plan. We used the Lakota Group, a very well-respected urban planning firm, to help with that, and we were very deliberate about engaging, you know, lots of people in the community that had something to say about downtown and lots of people that had something to add to the discussion. So in October, we basically said, here's the plan now. Let's get rolling. So I think that there are a number of kind of key initiatives or priorities that are kind of early steps. One of those is the formal establishment of some sort of downtown development organization. One of the critiques of our efforts were that they weren't really well orchestrated. There wasn't necessarily a quarterback. There were lots of organizations and entities that maybe had a hand in downtown development, but nobody really completely quarterbacking it. And so there was a strong recommendation that we form a Main Street organization. We've done some homework, we've done some due diligence, and we're in the process of completing an application to the state of Wisconsin to become a Main Street community. The application is due in about 2 weeks. So we've teamed with a number of people that were either on our steering committee or interested in this to put that application together. That application comes with a couple requirements. You have to have a full-time employed executive director if your community is more than 5,000 in size, which we clearly are. And they have to feel that you have adequate resources to make it go. So we've been working with a variety of partners. The county has been a long supporter of Cabo and some of its economic development efforts. We're trying to leverage that support to bring in support from the city and the BID and the CVB and the chamber on this downtown initiative. And I think we're getting there. We fully anticipate that we'd submit this Main Street application end of the month, be in a position to start, the hiring process for obtaining a full-time person to be kind of the downtown management leader. So that would be kind of one step in the process. I think another recommendation that, controversial, yes, but a recommendation nonetheless from Lakota, was that we ought to really pursue expansion of the streetcar system. I think some people are, supportive of that. I think it's a good idea and good for tourism and good for marketing and good for the city's image. And I think some people are, frankly told us they think it's a waste of resources. I think on the whole, from the work we saw from Lakota, there's something to be said for that infrastructure and its ability to kind of be a component of downtown revitalization. The city and its capital improvement planning process this year did put some funding into the budget for preliminary engineering and future expansion, so that's starting to move ahead. Another strong recommendation in the Lakota group plan was further exploration about the market and whether there's potential to have a year-round market, an indoor market, and potentially fill some niches there in terms of food and grocery type services in the downtown. The group that runs the Harbor Market recently obtained some community development block grant funding to do a feasibility study on the opportunity to establish a full-time year-round market. Another recommendation was to pursue some kind of key or critical large-scale adaptive reuse projects. Probably the most notable one there that's starting to gain some steam is the KYF redevelopment. So the former YMCA building has been largely vacant since the Y vacated it. It was purchased by a development group. They would like to convert it into apartment units. There's a significant gap between how much that project is going to cost and how much financing they could obtain from conventional markets. So they anticipate submitting an application to WIDA for tax credits to tackle that project. A key piece of that was proper zoning of the site, as well as maybe support from the city through a TIF district. Most of that has been wrapped up over the last couple of months, and I think they'll be submitting an application for redevelopment of that building. And there's a few other kind of news and notes. There's been some development with respect to the Virginia Towers project kind of getting resolved and getting finished. The Wells property in the downtown area has recently been acquired by a development group. We've been working with the city on repurposing some tax increment financing dollars into a commercial building rehab fund specifically for kind of the urban core of the city. And then just a few other notes, a couple developments. In this newsletter in front of you, there's a page, about page 8 or so, there's just kind of a little update on, what's new downtown, and it talks a little bit about the Main Street program, but it also lists about, 20 businesses or so that, have done something of significance in the downtown recently. They opened a new location moved into the downtown or opened a new business or hung out a new shingle. A couple notable ones, the Walgreens building has been nearly repurposed. It was bought by a developer. The old storefront was redone. It has two tenants now and a spot for a third. And two both microbreweries that have come into the community in the past year are now up and functioning. So, you know, there's some progress being made. I think all of us would like to see it accelerated and more sustainable and happening, you know, as fast as possible. I don't think it's going to happen overnight, but I do think we are making some progress.
Thank you. Does that conclude your report?
Sure.
Any other questions or comments from the committee? Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you.
Now we'll have a report from John Jansen on the status of our income maintenance program. I had this put on the agenda because with the fluctuation in budgets and that type of thing, with what happened last year, I wanted to see where we were this year and what some projections might be. So, John?
Sure. I'm going to turn it over to Adeline Green, the division director. She also brought with her Kim Peters from Economic Support as a supervisor. So,
Hello.
Hello.
Did you want just a general update on?
Yeah, just a general update on, you know, where we are with income maintenance, how it's going. I mean, we had the debate over the workers. I want a little update on that. I want to know if there's any changes that are going to cause us more irritation in funding and problems with the budget. You know, I mean, just go ahead and give us a little brief outline of where we've come and
where we're at. Okay, where we are now. I think everyone here knows that we entered into a consortium partnership with Racine County in 2012 to operate income maintenance programs as part of the governor's biennial budget. With two urban counties coming together, there was some level of problems initially in terms of our performance, and the state made several visits to our consortium and pointed out some issues with some of our performance. We were not doing well in several areas of performance. With the contract that we had with the state for income maintenance programs, for the first time we were rated on our performance, and there were very specific performance criteria for us. And in October, the state came and identified some issues with our consortium and made some recommendations in terms of how we could improve our performance coming into 2013, when the performance standards were going to be even more stringent. And so,
I hope that's not an omen.
Say hi.
David, did you do this?
No. No idea. I don't even know what the number is.
That's never happened before. Sorry about that. Continue.
No problem. And so after the state came to visit us in October, we were given some directives from them in terms of how we should design our operation for the call center in particular, so that we would be able to meet the performance standards. And based on some of that low performance, we came and asked for some additional staff in the fall to help us manage some of the workload, some of the tremendous workload. And in the 2013 budget, we were granted some additional staff. And since the state came to see us in October, our statistics have turned around tremendously. Just to give you some idea of where we were and where we are currently. In 2012, one of the performance standards for our call center was that calls should be answered within 21 minutes of the person calling us. And at least 1 month in September 2012, we surpassed that 21-minute standard, which is one of the reasons that the state came to see us. They pointed out to us that for four consecutive months, WKRP had been the worst performing consortium in the state, and we were not, you know, happy about that performance. But part of the issue had to do with our staffing levels. We had a number of vacant positions. We had a number of new staff, we had a number of people on long-term A&S or accident and sickness leave. And so by year end, we had hired the additional folks that we needed. And as a result of that, looking at our stats in January of this year, our average speed of answer for the call center went from 21 minutes in September of 2012 to less than 9 minutes as of January 2013. Because we were performing so poorly last year, our answer rate, meaning we get so many calls every single month. In September, we got over 19,000 calls in the call center, and only 57% of those calls were answered. You know, they were waiting to talk to people. They were waiting to get their cases processed. That was one of the things that the state pointed out also, that our answer rate was poor. Come January of this year, our answer rate is now 82%, which is excellent. The benchmark is 70%, that at least 70% of your calls would be answered within a timely fashion. And as of January, we received over 18,000 calls in the month of January, and our answer rate is 82%. And so seeing that turnaround, the state then sent us notice that they were amazed and astounded with the turnaround that we had made in terms of our performance. And part of that is having the right staffing mix in the call center as well as in our other units, because not only do we have a call center, but we have units that have to process the cases on a daily basis, on an hourly basis as they come in. And so we're in a much better position this year than we were last year.
With the state's happiness, did more funds come our way?
No.
Yeah, I didn't
think so. In fact, it's interesting that you would say that. We have not even received our contract for this year. The state says that the contract's in the mail. It should be here by the end of the week. And they have bumped up the performance. It's even more stringent than it was in 2012. So they verbalized to us how much they're going to give us, but it's about the same amount of money as last time.
Okay. That's really what I wanted to hear. I wanted to know where we were as far as, you know, it bothered me that we were in last place as far as helping our constituents, and I think the turnaround is, you know, you guys do a good job, and I wanted to make sure we were on that track. Any questions for Adelaide?
Did we ever get the issue with the Representative Kirkland resolved? We made a visit to her office about 3 weeks ago. She said she was somehow able to finagle, I think she said, $3 million for us, and she wanted to know what it was we did with it, so that when she went back to Kitty Rose, the Department of Health, in terms of asking for more, that she could justify why more.
And that was an issue they put in last year, or the biennium budget from the past previous years, where the state no longer allowed us to draw down some federal monies that we're using in human services to offset levy costs and to provide services to our constituents. Since they stopped that, what they did the previous 2 years was give us $1.5 million to fill, kind of backfill that. So we're working with Representative Kirkman and other legislators in the U.S. right now, actually the executive's offices, to see if we have additional funds coming our way in the next biennium budget. So that's an important progress right now.
Yeah, the visit that we made a couple weeks ago, she said we might see a teeny tiny cut. Says it's tough to get money for income maintenance. She says it's tough to get money for income maintenance up there working with her colleagues for whatever reason. That's almost a general.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, now, Bernie, why don't you start us off with this one?
Weeks ago, you received a letter, and the county executive received a letter from the Menominee Indian Tribe to meet and consider extension of the existing casino agreements, the intergovernmental agreement between the city of Kenosha, the county of Kenosha, and the Menominee Indian Nation, and the economic gaming authority. And tonight, representatives of the nominees are here. I invite them to the table at this time. If you can slide that. You have in your agenda packet a letter from the tribal chairman, Terry Korn. Mr. Korn is here with us today. And John
Wilhelm.
John Wilhelm is the attorney for the I can give you a little bit of background, which is also in the resolution, draft resolution that I prepared without a date for the extension. And the background is that we initially came to a fairly sophisticated agreement with all the parties on March 28th of 2005, and that went so far as the federal government, and the 2009 agreement was extended until 2011, about a year ago, and the board extended it until March 28th of this year, just a little less than 2 months from now. So this is very timely to prevent inadvertent lapse of the agreements that all the parties have entered into. I think one of the main things in federal approval is the environmental impact statement. I'll let the nominee tell you about the steps of that, but I know the final one was presented, and then there was comment periods, and Kenosha County did comment in support of the continued application and the acceptance of the environmental impact statement. With that, I think I'd like to turn it over to you gentlemen to give your thoughts on the length of extension and anything else you'd like to say.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Chairman Getz and members of the Executive Committee. My name is Craig Korn. And I'll meet you up, the chairman. Just elected again last Saturday. Thank you. Thank you for your time. I come here tonight to ask for concurrence and support to the amendment to the existing intergovernmental agreement between the County of Kenosha, City of Kenosha, Menominee Kenosha Gaming Authority, and Menominee Indian Tribe. Basically asked for a two-year extension. The reason behind that is we figure that within the next month we should have federal approval, and we're trying to coincide that with the time that the governor would have to give his approval for the application. That's pretty much where we're at. I'd open the floor, if that's okay with the chairman, to ask any questions.
Sure. I just want to clarify something that Supervisor Alverman asked of Todd Battle before. And in speaking with you prior to the meeting, you said that you had a meeting with Governor Walker, and he kind of backed off that all-inclusive tribal situation for the go-ahead. And if you want to enlighten us on that a little bit.
Yeah. Thank you, Chairman Getz. We had what is called a quarterly meeting. It's a meeting that Governor Hells holds every quarter with the chairmen or board presidents of the 11th tribes within Wisconsin. President Molson, from the Flambeau, at that particular meeting last Tuesday, and Baraboo, Wisconsin Dells, posed that question. He asked him point blank, I want to hear from your mouth what are the criterias, and to speak on it, I want to hear out of his mouth. He said that one was local support, two was consensus among all the tribes, and three was no major net expansion in gaming. I kind of refreshed him as to what my take was on the gaming scene. No major net expansion in gaming. you know, that particular referendum spoke to state gaming, you know, lottery and those sorts. I made it clear to him that there's no language, there was no language in that, question that was posed about expanding gaming. There was no language in there to Indian gaming. That was specific to state gaming. So he assured me to go back and look at that to make sure that that was clear. The other one was the consensus among the tribes. You know, and there was, like I said, we had all 11 chairmen or presidents there. And I made it a point to talk to him about our relationship with Potawatomi, you know, that we have had 7 discussions, whether it was a management deal, a development deal, that they don't want to come to the table, they don't want to talk with Menominee, so what is he going to do then? So he made it clear that he would, talk about it. He would maybe facilitate a meeting between us two, that he was positive that there would be some kind of agreement that could be reached between the two bodies. So I took that as positive. You know, we, like I said, we're all there with the 11 chairmen or presidents, and it was clear, you know, President Green Deer from the Ho-Chunk Nation, President Molson from the Lac des Flambeaux Nation, the representative from the Stockbridge Nation, it clear that the only consensus that you're going to get is that there isn't going to be a consensus among the tribes, and we're all not. I think he's foolish to think that we're all going to hold hands and get along, and we made that clear. You know, we have our differences, and he needs to understand that, and hopefully he'll respect that. And this is before his administration. We have our histories between the tribes, and he understood that. And after I shook his hand after meeting, I kind of apologized for being so frank in our conversation. You know, It means a lot to me as a chairman of Menominee, and I know it means a lot to you from Kenosha. And I wanted it to be clear, you know, that we want a fair shake. And he reassured me after a meeting that we would, you know, there was something that could be done. We'd work out something. Those were exact words. We'll work something out.
Thank you. We had a hand up, Supervisor Rose.
Thank you. For over 10 years, leadership has come to the board, lobbyists, lawyers, all saying that approval from the federal government was imminent. And tonight, once again, we hear it's now 30 days. And why is this more credible than the optimism that we've heard for the last 10 years or more?
I think there's a couple examples. You know, we got a new administration in the White House, that's very favorable to Indian country. You know, if you look in the past, President Obama, his past administration, his administration has taken probably 10 times more land in the trust than the Bush administration. You know, from a Native American standpoint, that's a good thing. You know, and your representative here had talked about the environmental impact statement. We've had our environmental impact statement published in the Federal Register, went through the process, there was a 30-day comment period. It was extended another 30 days. The city of Milwaukee commented, the county of Milwaukee commented, and Forest County, Potawatomi commented on it. We addressed those comments, and it went through the process, and it was finalized. We have never been there. We've never crossed that threshold. And we've got a positive, I don't know for sure, positive recommendation from the Midwest Regional Office. We're, as Menominees go, and the motion and this application, we're uncharted waters. We've never been this far before. And believe me, I've followed this project just as long as you have. I remember, you know, when I was 18 years old following this project when we just started following it. You know, and I know, being on a tribal government in the last 3 years, I know the history of the application. And I know for a fact that we've never been this far, ever. And like I said, with the current administration, I'm quite positive that we'll get an approval.
Well, why haven't they been approving of it for the last over 4 years? President Obama is not new.
Well, if you're familiar with the application in the waning days of the Bush administration, it came up with the Arpan memo. We were denied. I'm sure you remember that, 2009. Yes. Menominee was one of the only tribes, I believe, that challenged that lawsuit. And we won. We won the settlement when they pulled that referendum, the Arpan memo. We challenged it because it wasn't federal law. We have to follow federal law in these processes. Bush administration didn't. They come up with what was called an Arpan memo. You know, communicable distance from your reservation. That's why they deny us. We challenged it and we won. We settled with the federal government. They agreed to give us a fresh look at the application. And we did that. So I believe there was, 23 items after the settlement that we had to update? Financial, environmental. We did that. We did the updates and they've been true to their word to give us a fresh look. So,
well, if you're expecting approval in 30 days, I suppose we could debate that and just speculate on that.
Yeah.
But let's just assume for the sake of discussion that it's 30 days or thereabouts. Why are we extending this for 2 years? Why aren't we looking at this once again in 6 months or 90 days? Why 2 years?
Like I said, you know, it's been a lengthy process and time-consuming and a heavy financial process on the tribe. As we got that update, I know we spent in excess of $300,000 updating an application that was denied in the remaining hours of the Bush administration. What we're trying to do is keep the application alive. These intergovernmental agreements that we have are real key to the application. So, you know, we're asking for a 2-year extension with the federal, you know, keeping in mind the federal process and a process within the state here. So.
Yeah, just if I can just jump in. I think the way the IGA read and the way it was written back in 2005, it was when after all the approvals were received. So even if we got the Section 20, the approval from the federal government tomorrow, the governor has up to a year under the regulations to make a decision. That doesn't mean he has to take a year, but the regulations say up to a year. He could even ask for an extension for 6 months. And so if we did it for 6 months and we got approval tomorrow, we could be in the middle of, and we still wouldn't have all the approvals necessary. And then the IGA could lapse. I think that's kind of the thinking behind that time period. Okay. If it read, you know, only until we got the Section 20 federal approval, then that I would agree that saying 2 years is not realistic. It would be shorter, but it's all the approvals, which would include the governor's approval.
Yeah.
Any other questions,
no.
Supervisor? Any other questions from the floor? Supervisor Hallman?
Not so much a question, but a comment. I've said a lot of this before. I just want to let you know that there are those of us around the table who do understand and we look at some of the poverty statistics, the domestic violence rates, the difficulty in educating young people. The lack of economic development tools that have been available to you over the many, 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 many years of the history of the U.S. government. We are aware, and I think if we were in the same shoes that you are, we'd probably be doing the same thing.
Did you have your hand up?
No.
Okay, any other, so the length they're asking for is 2 years?
From our point of view, too, I mean, so we don't have to do this every year. Last time it was 13 months, I think 2 years is the minimum I would recommend before the board has to take this. I think the federal process is long and lengthy. from our consultant in Washington, D.C. He says these things go on for 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. Sometimes I know you don't want to hear that. We don't want to hear that, but that is how it goes out there in the East Coast. So we're kind of hopefully getting towards the end of that process, but I don't think it would be wise just to do another 1 year extension. I think 2 would be the minimum.
Supervisor Alverman.
Mr. Chairman, I've like a couple of us here at the table, I've been involved in this since the beginning, I guess. I was the chairman of the board in 2005 when we held all the hearings and did all the work and went in agreement with the community and with Menominees and the calendar started back then. So I am still secure in the fact that the community would like us to pursue this. And I'm still secure in the fact that it's viable economically. I know that we have many other options in the community. Things have turned around, but this is certainly one of the largest that we would see in the next decade. So I would move that we pass this resolution for the 2-year term and send it on to the county board.
It's been moved by Supervisor Alverman. Seconded by Supervisor Esposito. Any further discussion on the motion?
I agree with that. I agree with what Dennis said. The community has not only voted on it once, but I think it's been twice now in favor.
Well, the city and the county both together voted on it, so some of us have two
that we represent, obviously. And anytime you get an economic shot in the arm like this would possibly be, with the amount of job creation that you get out of this and tax base, I think it's all positive for the community. And I, as Supervisor Overman said, support it fully. I hope we all could.
Thank you, Vice Chair Kubicki. The only thing I will say before I call the vote is, at what point are you looking at bringing forth the developer for this?
We've been in discussions with various developers. We're still in some pretty heavy negotiations with one out of Madison and another one within the last month out of Chicago has reached out to the tribe, and we were entertaining a meeting, I believe, February 21st down in Chicago. So we got two that we're in discussions with now. We know based on history that once federal approval does come, that so comes the developers too. You know, that nobody wants to invest the time, money, or resources on a project that could or could not get federal approval. Once you get that federal approval, it's knocking on the doors up there by us.
Okay. I agree 100% with Supervisor Alverman. I think the community, for the most part, is behind it. I know that my district was behind it on both referendums. But I do have a concern to make sure that the developer that is put in place is going to be able to deliver. Last thing we need is something half completed after we've started the process. And the second thing is to make sure that the scope of the project is the same or better than it was before. So those are two things going down the pike that I'm going to be looking for. I certainly concur with the 2-year extension. I understand the process. No negative towards that, but just so you know, I mean, it's been a long time since initial discussions. Like Supervisor Elverman said, I wasn't even here. A couple of the people were, but I wasn't, and we need to make sure that all that is in place, just for the record. So,
thank you.
Did you have a...
Well, these developers that, thank you, Mr. Chairman, these developers that you've been in contact with or negotiating with, have they done work of this magnitude that you're looking to get into in this area here?
Both of them have. You know, they understand Indian gaming. They have done Indian gaming projects, both of them.
Thank you for that clarification. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to question, or rather raise an inquiry, regarding some of the developers that you've been in contact with. You said that there were some negotiations that you guys had to kind of work through. Could you possibly elaborate on some of those negotiations, at least regarding like the topics?
Well, I think there's two key things that I should tell you about. One is the length of the time of the development agreement, and two is the percentage of the net win that they're going to be entitled to as developers or managers. Those are two crucial things. And we talk percentages like that, you know, 5% could potentially mean $50 million.
So that you also feel, though, that if you were to get all these approvals and it would move forward, though, that those negotiations would be, like, more able to come to a close, though?
I know that. You know, a lot of people are, you know, just like we've all seen that carrot dangled in front of us. You know, it's there. You know, when you start talking about it, investing real time and money mm-hmm. into it, nobody wants to fund up uncertainty. Once you get federal approval, that probably knocks down 90-95% of the worry. And you're going to have people coming on board, because as much scrutiny as the federal government, DIA, Indian Gaming, go through with that application, that's a solid application. It's going to hold up through anything.
Okay.
I don't know that there was ever maybe one instance where Indian Gaming approved the application, it was overturned.
It's good to know that it does like carry some weight then. Thank you.
It does. Thank
you. Supervisor Alden.
Just one question that just popped into my head. Have you heard anything on the new Secretary of the Interior in terms of what her thoughts are on tribes?
There was an endorsement that came out yesterday from one of the Washington tribes that she worked closely with SNF to NCI, National Congress of American Indians. They forwarded the tribes a letter from that particular Washington tribe that was supporting that endorsement. But other than that, I mean, as far as off-reservation gaming or other, you know, native issues, I haven't seen her take a stance on any.
I'm asking because that can really affect the timeline. I mean, that was the issue that we had with the previous Secretary Ken Salazar. They spent months briefing him on the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act. I mean, there's issues with oil and gas industry, issues with employees inside the agency, and it just sucked all the air out of them from even dealing with this as an issue, which is why it took so long. So I'm just trying to make sure that we don't have a situation where the highway turns into a parking lot.
I think that if we can get that approval, like I said, within the next month, that you know, ultimately, you know, it's a two-part process. You know, they approve the first part, should have however long Governor Walker takes. I think you take probably 6 to 9 months to approve it. That's as much time as after she's confirmed that she'd be able to get up to speed on.
We'll see how long it takes her to confirm.
Yeah, that's
Bernie?
Another question, isn't it?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Another supervisor, different committee, had asked a question that maybe we could pose to the tribe today, and that is, how long is the option to buy the real estate that's now dairy open for the tribe at the current time?
2015.
March 1st, 2015.
That was my question.
So it'll tie right into a two-year extension.
So we'll match up what's on the table today.
Okay. Seeing no other hands, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Passes unanimously. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Committee Chairman.
Any committee chairs have any update on their committee activities?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do. Not really so much an update, but preview of what's coming in front of my committee tomorrow, Judiciary and Law. Supervisor Willis, I believe Sheriff Bethes talked to you in regard to this mobile command unit, and I've gotten emails that have been sent back and forth. Just kind of want to bring everybody up to speed on what's happening with that. The Sheriff Department's got $116,000 federal grant for a bomb squad, so on and so forth. It's too technical. They can integrate this into this mobile command unit, so they can use this federal grant. They had 13 squads. That it's kind of sketchy. I invite anybody to come to the meeting tomorrow. It's going to be laid out for us.
Sketchy.
Yeah, well, yeah, my understanding, and Supervisor Rose can back me up on this if he has any other, if I'm off track on this. They had 13 squads that obviously they did not have the software updates to put into. There was a cross in that. So he wanted to use that $375,000 because they feel they can use the squads they have. And I did pose the question to him, is this may come up with, now what happens when we want more money for new squads? So I'm sure that's going to come up in discussion and debate. So that was the deal. $375,000, $116,000. That gets them to this kind of price tag for this mobile command unit. So.
In the people that I talked to, my concern was I'm not going to support anything with getting rid of the 13 vehicles or any part of them if any of that is going to be asked for in this budget. Okay, I mean, if you want to trade the 13 vehicles for this year for the mobile command unit, that's fine. But I don't want to hear that we need anything for those vehicles' interiors or those vehicles before the end of the year.
13.
Yes, because that's just not the way we...
He assured me that we wouldn't.
Okay.
Because I posed that question.
He runs his house. I mean, he sat before all the committees, and I remember finance asking him, point blank, somebody asked him, I don't know who it was, well, can we get rid of the cars for this year? And his answer was no. So, you know, maybe there is the software upgrade not going into them that they need. That's fine. It's his. He's running the shop over there, but I don't want him to come back to us for any money for those vehicles if he does that. Just make that clear at your committee.
I will make that clear at the committee meeting tomorrow. I don't know if Supervisor Rose have anything else to add in regards to that I might have missed. I just want everybody to be aware of it. It's coming down. Mm-hmm.
Fair enough.
The only other 2 points I would make is, one, I suggested, and I still believe, that the country thunder should make a substantial contribution or to this. I think I sense a reluctance on the part of the sheriff to request it. I think that $30,000, $10,000 a year is very modest request.
I'll bring that up.
I don't think that we should let this go by. That was one of the strong reasons why he wanted this. It's not the only reason, but certainly a strong sales point that he made to us for it, and I think we ought to ask them for this. This is a big security event for the Sheriff's Department annually, and they're getting top flight security that they could not get in the private sector. They are getting officers with the right to arrest. That's a powerful tool. So this is security like they cannot get anywhere else. I think they ought to contribute to this, and I think then $30,000, $10,000 a year, over and above what the Sheriff's Department wants for their normalized expenses, and I understand they're going to request Country Thunder for an additional $10,000 for normalized expenses. This $30,000, I think should be over and above those kinds of expenses. My understanding also was that, and I concur, this is a trade-off. The mobile unit for cars.
Yep.
We're not going to see a request for double the number of cars the following year. That wouldn't be playing fair. But annually, they do have a request for cars.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me add to that. I'll bring that up at my committee about the Country Thunder kick in, so to speak, and I talked to Supervisor Alderman before the meeting because I respect his opinion on that because he's been around that since day one, and it doesn't hurt to ask, but, you know, I mean, and I agree, you know, so that will, you can be rest assured that will be debated and brought up at my committee tomorrow.
Supervisor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This Country Thunder, this isn't the only venue that they deal with within Kenosha County, correct?
Correct.
What happens in the other communities where they have a venue? Is there something set up with those counties there? Is there a payback other than just hiring their law enforcement back to patrol the sites? Or are they getting any kind of money back for that?
That would be an excellent question for the chairman of the committee to call the sheriff with tomorrow morning and ask him about that for the committee. Because that's a good point. I mean, other places that have mobile command vehicles, are there functions that contribute in those counties? That would be a good question. A very good question to ask.
That's one that I have.
And I don't know that answer.
Right. You know, that's something we need to find out, I believe, and, you know, let's play fair as far as that's concerned. And I agree with what everyone else said about the idea of trading off vehicles for a command unit. I don't believe that should be the case. I think our men and women that are on the road should have the best equipment possible, not rickety, crappy vehicles out there, because this is a maintenance program that's been upheld for years. And I don't think we should do anything to hinder that process. The other couple of questions I have related to this and unrelated to this is, as far as the judicial board, how, you know, as far as the courthouse security goes as we have it today, is it adequate as we see it fit today? Does there need to be any tweaking done in it? Can we make any improvements? I'd rather, on that particular issue, I'd rather be proactive than reactive after something might happen. I don't want anything to happen, but I'd rather have that happen, be proactive than reactive. And then the other thing I'd like to address as far as this committee goes, and whenever you feel it's prudent to do so in the months coming, have us relook over the work rules that we have implemented. And after a few more months, all the players involved as far as managers and workers have been implementing these rules and see how they're working between the two and see how that's going. Make any adjustments in any flat spots that we see to make that wheel go round and round instead of stop and go, if that be the case. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome. So what you're asking for is looking at what we've come to with the handbooks with all of the unions and see how they're working?
How it's working between management and the employees itself.
You had your hand up next,
yeah.
And then
I just wanted to comment on the Country Thunder thing. Supervisor Esposito had asked me about that, and I don't think I personally asked them at all. $10,000, whatever it is. They are a now profitable group. The thing that we have to remember is that they do contribute heavily to us and to the town of Randall. The town of Randall gets a percentage of the ticket sales. The county gets a bond of about 120-some. That's the last number I knew. Maybe it's more now. And they didn't ask for that. Supervisor Rose said that they get the best protection that money can buy. They were bullied into that by us. A lot of people maybe don't remember that, but they had their own security. And planning and development, and everybody kind of said, no, it's our way or the highway. As far as who's going to do the policing out there, you're not going to have this again. So they put up this $100,000 every year bond to the county, and they play by our rules. But they didn't ask for this, and they do pay. They pay dearly. That's a lot of dough for 4 days.
Well, I think they should pay dearly. I mean, they're getting tough. They're a private group getting almost the majority of the Sheriff's Department personnel. What other private organization event has that kind of private security force that has the right to arrest? And why did we do it? Because there was chaos out there before. Absolute chaos. Traffic chaos, drinking chaos, minors drinking, drunk driving. It was a impossible situation for the private security firms It was out of control, absolutely out of control. So what they do elsewhere, I don't know, and I frankly don't care. I think it's good information to have that. I am not reluctant to charge them. The fact that we are breaking even on this, this is not, you ask a private citizen who calls the sheriff's department to their house, do they get this kind of enormous amount of security? No. This is the full force of Kenosha County behind this event to keep it peaceful, orderly, so that people can come out there and enjoy themselves and they don't have to be worried about thugs and bullies and drunks taking over. And that's what would happen. So I think that they need to kick in. In terms of the courthouse, and I'm there every single day, I think the courthouse security in the front door does an excellent job. And the sheriff's department does post people throughout the courthouse every single day.
Well, you would know.
And when there is any kind of disturbance in the courthouse, I think they're very responsive.
They actually updated their machine in there, and it's, it's a much easier, when I go in there, you know, they, even if they have to wave the goofy wand at you, it's still, they do a good job in there. So
they do a respectful
job. I'm very pleased with
it. It's not like getting on an airline.
It was.
Let's not go there. We're going to stop the conversation.
No, it wasn't.
Let's go flying.
Any other comments?
Sure,
Supervisor.
Are we off of the?
We're off. You could start anew.
Okay.
Or if you'd like.
Okay. I'll start anew.
You do that.
Only one thing I want to do on the old is that we have to remember that according to that economic study that. That Country Thunder's bringing about $5 million in 4 days in Kenosha County.
So, well, I agree with it. Well, so that's, I don't know if I agree with them.
I don't
agree. I agree they're bringing something in. I'm not going to go as far as saying that that's correct. But
the on things that my committee is doing, I think I reported on our last meeting, so everybody's heard, though, the most recent. I think the biggest thing right now is the 60th Street Tower. And we all know where that is. That's a total hole. So our concerns are to get through the next month. These are the biggest icing months. If we can get through March, the urgency won't be as bad, and then we can put up with the city stall, whatever they want to do. March is what we're concerned with, because if we get that quarter inch of icing is where they said we're in our biggest danger. We haven't had that yet. And we're just hoping we don't. So if we get through here, and then we can do the waiting game, and you know, if it takes us through the summer into the fall to get this tower done. The other big projects that Facilities has been doing are actually, you know, mostly completed. I did report on the parking garage, and that's going to be hopefully within the next month we'll have the banking situation finalized, and the only reason we have that problem is because the state is involved. You know, we'd have had that completed also. We will have that. We were going to get tough, possibly, and decided, you know, according to our council, that, okay, if it's going to take 5 weeks, let's just not get tough. And we've written this out long enough. We'll write it out, so we'll have that parking structure. We'll start being able to collect properly for it, and we'll learn from sometimes, you know, and a lot of us used to say this 15, 18 years ago on the county board floor, sometimes accepting this money is a pain, you know, because you're in partnership then, and we run our projects so much better than when we run them with the state. And, you know, we're at their mercy on this deal, and that's the problem.
I have one quick question of you from your committee. And don't take this personal, because I don't know what has been done in the past or what's right or wrong. But you guys approved rates for the following golf year?
Yes.
Before you knew how last year's golf year ended. Can you explain to me why? Or how, or if that's always been the way it's done? Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
The auditing on the golf course has never been completed until about March. And we have to have the rate so they can start selling.
You know, I suppose. Okay. Permits. All right.
If people want to buy these $1,000 passes, we can't wait. That's how it's been for years.
Okay.
We do, and I've said it, and it was quoted, and I can tell this committee, our preliminary audit is good. And that's not going to change dramatically. I mean, it's really this year has turned things around. And you can't say that it's for any one reason. Our staff has done a very good job. But this year, truthfully, the biggest reason is the weather.
Yeah, sunshine.
And so, I mean, we didn't have the rain. We didn't. When we lose a weekend with the two golf courses, we lose $50,000 between the two. We didn't have any of that this year. So that's why. And if you read, and I quoted the numbers, the food thing has gone beyond expectations. We put in new fryers. We put in new, these fish fries. They're like 70% more than the year before. The big key that we wanted was once your car was parked in that parking lot, we wanted to get more dollars out of your wallet per visit. And that's what they've done. On food, on the different vending, and on the raising. Exact numbers, but we're talking, when you have a person spend $3.87 per person on average for food, and it jumps to five something, that's huge. It's huge, and that's where we made a big turnaround.
Thank you.
Are we going to be serving a hard liquor there now at both establishments? Weren't we going to do something with that as well, Dennis?
I was thinking the exact question.
We're working on it, and the last I knew, we were doing an RFP. There was some pushback from the administration,
mm-hmm.
and I will have to check and report back where we are on that, because I mean, that was the request of the committee, and that's where
right.
That's where we were headed. That's right. Where
yeah,
I just was wondering how that was going.
The administration has gotten a lot of push on that. I think he is cautious. It's very similar to the pressure that you would get from other Indian tribes. And he's getting it from other golf courses and taverns.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Well, just to comment on that, because I've been pushing this for a long time. We are either in business or we're not in business. And if we're going to be in business, then you have to do those things. You have to provide the food, the banquet facilities, the liquor, the beer. That's just part of business. And we can't be subsidizing these kinds of things and have our hands tied behind our back because some other business in the community is opposed to it. If you want to run a golf course, then you have to be competitive. If you don't want to run a golf course because you are catching flack from others, well, then you don't get into these issues. But I firmly believe if you're going to be in business, you've got to be in business to be profitable. I don't want to see the non-golfers subsidizing this. And there are more non-golfers.
But, yeah, but I mean, I almost got run out of the county board floor when I got beer pushed through.
Exactly.
You know, that was 8-10 years ago. We didn't sell beer even.
We said the same thing about Brookside. We said about Brookside. We've got to make this a break-even, it's not profitable situation. We can't continue to subsidize it. And they've done it.
Yeah. Let the record show. I actually agree with Supervisor Rose on this one. I think that we should, and I'd like to hear a report on that, because right. I think that...
Well, I've been pushing for this for
I think
years.
Anywhere else you go, people assume that's going to be there. You know, so...
Well, we need to do it, and I've been pushing hard for it, so...
Okay, super.
I've talked with constituents that have passes out at the county golf courses, and that was a big thing.
Yeah. Well, see, what we want to do is keep people there.
Exactly.
And
that's what they say.
We won't have banquets if we don't. No. You know, we don't have. And we've got the beautiful facility. We have weddings, all these things. Yes. So, I mean, I've said all this so many times.
Yeah, and you'd see food go from $3.87. Way past $5, you get a few Jack and Cokes out there. All of a sudden, it's $8 or $9.
And I would tell everyone here, go out there and try that fish fry. It's a hell of a
I've heard it's very good.
But at both courses,
I'm going to Petsville. So yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
should try it.
Supervisor Hall?
It's not in your realm. It's too far north.
There really isn't a whole lot. Most of them confirming a lot of executive appointments. Versus, all of you know, much of the budget is state and federal money, so when those things are in flux, there really isn't a whole lot behind executive appointments to approve. However, at our last meeting, we did have an extensive conversation with the DCFS about what it is we have in our community as far as resources and programs for at-risk youth concerning mental health. One of the major things that came up out of the committee is that we actually do not have a child psychiatrist. So in terms of really being able to form an accurate diagnosis of what's going wrong with a child and providing medication and so forth, is something in our community we don't have. Our hospitals don't have it. We don't have it. This is something that I think is an evolving discussion for us. I did email the committee late last week and just basically asked them five different questions to get a sense as to whether or not they wanted to explore this deeper. We could certainly pull in the school districts and try to see where we can get some traction on this. I think this is something we can take the lead on, and it would be very positive and very interesting.
I'd like your committee to keep pursuing that. I mean, because we're seeing the governor push for all kinds of mental health stuff, and I want to know before I get slapped upside the head with an unfunded mandate, you know, what's going on. So if your committee could stay on top of where mental health is going and what we can do to be a leader without the state having us open up programs, without the funding for it, would be good. So just if you could keep us apprised of that, I'd appreciate it.
Slide into that a little bit about the state budget. It's going to be a good 2 months before we know really what the details are of what he's talking about. I mean, the governor comes and makes a budget address. It's 1,300 pages. The fiscal bureau makes a budget in brief, which is about 540 pages, that basically says this is what's in the giant book. This is what the agencies requested. This is why the governor said yes or no to what they wanted, We really don't know for about 2 months in terms of, with great specificity, what the funding sources will be, who's going to be getting what, how that stuff's going to be allocated, what the program changes are. We literally have no idea. I mean, I just talked to Adam Lee before she left. Some of these things in workforce development, food stamps, the governor wants to do, we don't know if that's going to be another consortium or not. We just know there's some language with a dollar amount attached to it. Is it going to go to Milwaukee? Is it going to get, how's this going to get distributed? We don't know those things. And so to flush those out in terms of the full budget, it really does take about 2 months before you know. And there are ways of sort of monitoring those updates and tracking that, but you've really got to be quick on them when they come up. Because those things are usually ready a couple days before the committee takes action on them.
Thank you. Seeing no other hands, could I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Rose, seconded by Supervisor Elverman to adjourn. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
No.
This is a discussion.
Oh, look. Yeah, I mean, it's...